Welcome to the F3, Female Forward Finance. I'm your host, Jill Faraday Lloyd, a financial advisor at UBS Private Wealth, and I'm on a mission to help women have agency with their capital. The F3 is a space for real conversations about money, power, and everything in between. You'll hear from experts, entrepreneurs, and everyday Janes about the choices they're making when it comes to their wealth. These are critical conversations because women are earning, building, and shaping what comes next in the world, and it's time we own every bit of our power. When we think about exit planning, we often focus on valuation, taxes, deal structure, and wealth preservation. But there's a third leg of exit planning that's just as important: preparing for what comes next. And for many founders, the business isn't just what they do, it's who they are. Long before a sale occurs, they face one of the hardest challenges of all: stepping out of the CEO seat, letting go of control, and proving the business can thrive without them. That's tricky. Today, we're talking about the emotional and psychological side of exit planning with Dr. Lee Carney, a trusted advisor to CEOs, founders, boards, and executive leadership teams. We'll explore why letting go is so difficult, how to prepare for the transition from operator to owner, and how founders can embrace the opportunities that come after a sale. I'm so thrilled to have you here, Lee. Welcome to the F3.
Oh, welcome, Jill. It's nice to be here.
A bit about your background. Lee is a CEO and C-suite talent and team coach. She's a trusted advisor to the world's most senior leaders and their teams. With more than three decades of C-suite level, she brings a rare combination of rigorous psychological assessment, data-driven insight, and a deep human understanding to the art of executive development. CEOs, boards of directors, and top management teams seek out Lee when the stakes are highest, when organizational performance depends on the clarity, alignment, and growth of the people at the very top. I cannot wait to dive into this conversation, Lee. Thank you so much for being here.
It's my pleasure to be here. I think that the opportunity to support women at any level, but particularly ones who are driven and have focus and have invested their lives in many different ways. I mean, it's my pleasure to be here. Thank
you. Thanks. Well, I really want to talk a little bit about your background and how you came into working with C-suite executives and senior leaders. I'll leave it to you to answer that in whatever way you think is appropriate.
That's a complicated thing to talk about because I'm a very non-traditional female, number one, but led a non-traditional path. I mean, truly, I started in hard science, looking at physiology and performance from sort of the quantitative way of looking at it, from excellence and pushing, all the while wanting to know what the human being could do. How hard could you push them? Where are the breaking points? And the non-traditional piece here was that I got invited by the Center for Creative Leadership to put together a Fitness for Effective Leadership for their flagship course, their CEO course back in the day. I think it was right around 1989 or so, 90. And that ask required me to go through a leadership development program myself. And that's when I figured out I was a round peg trying to fit in a square hole, and that yes, I was a good student and I could get A's and I could answer the right questions, but I didn't love what I did. And going through that program myself in order to understand the lay of the land about leadership development and figure out how to bring the physical presence into the leader, because you can't separate the person from the leader. You just can't. It's not possible. So again, that was an interesting wake-up call for me. I was working on a doctorate in physiology at the time, and I did a big switch and had to redo a master's in clinical psych, and then got myself into a PhD program at DU when, honestly, raising my right hand, I lied to both. I lied to DU and I lied to CCL and told them that I was doing part-time on both because I knew nobody could do a good assessment of what I was capable of doing. So yeah, there's that, Jill. Figuring out how to do two full-time jobs was easy after being a single parent.
Yeah, single parenthood, that's a big job.
Mm-hmm.
Two full-time jobs, that's also a big job.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk a little bit today about that leadership seat. And these are founders, female founders, who are leading businesses and leading at home too, right? But one of the trickiest pieces, and I really want to dive into this, of being a leader or a founder of a business is that ability or that moment when you realize it might be time for me to step out of the CEO seat and into the executive chairmanship seat. And that's a huge transition that founders face, preparing that from basically every day running the business to strategy and exit is complicated. What have you seen in your seat that makes that such a difficult transition?
Oof. Good question, Jill. Good question. I need to back up a little bit and say that people at the top of the house, founders, CEOs, C-suite executives, they are not normal people. Let's start there. Just like Olympic athletes, symphony conductors, Air Force pilots, world-class surgeons, you name them, top of the top, when you're defining excellence, those people don't fit the normal curve. So you have to treat them differently. You have to look at them differently. And because of all of that difference, they're bright, they're driven, they're curious, they love to learn. I tease some of the people that I've worked with and call them high maintenance. They got a lot going on. Usually they suck up all the oxygen in the room because of everything that's going on inside of them. And so I've spent a lot of time taking the hard science background that I know well and coming up with a battery of tools to be able to assess with a bunch of instruments to help these senior people understand what they do well and where they're similar and where they're different from the normal population and how to manage that difference. But I guess the starting point, yes, this is a complicated question. No, that isn't the whole answer, is to recognize that they're different and how that difference can play out as strengths, but also opportunities. Because when you're that big of a drink of water, it's intimidating for a lot of people. And the people at the top don't get good feedback.
Ooh, tell me more about that.
They don't get good feedback because everybody's got an agenda. And even if they don't have an agenda, they've got a filter. They've already decided who that person is. And so those that I work with welcome the approach that I bring with years of experience, 35 years of experience working at the top, plus, as you said, lots of schooling and practice using the tools that will help identify competencies and strengths and personality makeup and how invested you can be in owning a company and where you're overplaying your strengths and all of the things that are necessary for success if you're going to learn how to leverage your strengths well and deploy them in a discriminating fashion, not just use them everywhere, because there's a lot of power when you're at the top. And I've never worked with someone who didn't want to use that power well. But if they don't get good feedback and they don't have somebody to talk to and you can't understand who the person is and what their goals are and what they're trying to accomplish and who the players are around them who are going to deliver on objectives that are striving towards the ultimate goal, they're missing a lot of important information.
So it sounds like it's a feedback loop that's broken or complicated. And the goal, let's say in this case, the founder is interested in ultimately selling her business, right? There's a lot tied up in that.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about this offline. Mm-hmm. But what do you think, in your experience, how does the founder's willingness to actually let go of the company make the company more valuable?
Well, if you think about the fact that there's not just one person in one brain making things happen, and if that founder, that CEO, hires good talent, they have to be smart about using that good talent. And it's probably no surprise to you that these abnormal, I'm going to call them abnormal or supernormal people who choose to live their lives at the top are attracted to people just like them. Imagine that. And so they end up hiring people who are just as driven, just as bright, just as controlling, just as able and want to make decisions, want to use their talents. So I spent a lot of time helping those leaders figure out how to create the right environment for everybody else to do their best work after they get them aligned towards a goal that motivates everyone. So there's commitment to the goal above the individual, commitment to the team above the individual. And you know what, Jill? You can walk into a room and any human being can feel the energy if people are working together or not. You know, you can feel it. You can feel it.
You were talking about this notion of organizational resilience with me the other day, and this idea that a really strong team development. So you've got this commitment to the goal. You've got the leadership driving the team. The team then drives itself. How does that organizational resilience occur beyond that? Are there tricks? Because if the goal is we want to sell the business in 2 years, what are the things that need to happen? So with that as context.
What you just laid out is easy to understand once you have all of the quantitative items listed to prepare for a sale. That doesn't account for the human capital.
Mm.
You can get everybody driving towards some number or some market share or some, I don't know, something you can measure, some set of KPIs. But if you don't hold side by side the factors in the human capital that are actually delivering these results, you could fail. You could absolutely fail. I need to come back to what I said about how you can feel the difference.
Yeah.
And I know you can read a lot about trust in all the various socials right now. Trust is so this, and psychological safety is so that. And I think it's important to remember that trust is a mitigating factor. It doesn't guarantee results. It doesn't guarantee psychological safety, which is the latest term made up for things we psychologists have known for 50 years. They just package it different, like emotional intelligence. I mean, there are factors around all of those big words. And yes, they matter, but I can trust, Jill, that you will do what you say you will do when you say you will do it. And that's table stakes.
Mm.
But can I trust that you have my back when you figure out that I'm off my game today, or I'm really worried about something and I don't have anybody to tell right now? Something's not going right. Can't prove it, but my gut feels like something's not right. Can I trust that you'll cover and think of the team first and maybe even share resources that you didn't plan to share in order for the whole team to be cohesive? That kind of trust doesn't happen overnight. And it doesn't usually happen until you've had a succession of wins and also a failure. People learn a lot when they screw up and have to fix a problem and figure out that mistakes are where you learn the most. If you're an adult, and once everybody around the table of a senior team realizes that we're all human and we need to make mistakes, or we're not driving hard enough and fast enough, and what are we going to do with that conflict? And how are we not going to blame, but pick that problem apart and learn? That work that just came out of my mouth in a few minutes is real work. It's hard work. Requires commitment. Requires a relationship. Requires the leader to have a strategy with a vision that everyone can buy into that matters. It has to matter to each individual. It might matter for a different reason, but it has to matter. If it isn't challenging, if the senior team thinks just the tech guy or just the sales guy can win this for us, then it's going to be really hard to create the right environment for everybody to leverage their skills.
I love this. I love this idea that trust is a mitigating factor, and it isn't something that is just the table stakes of I can expect you to do what you say.
Yeah.
But it is the experience over and over again. It's the repetition. It's the failure together and the way you pick your... It's the resilience. It's the organizational resilience. That's the point.
And that's why women are better at this than
men. Oh, tell me more about that.
Because it's a little like a family.
All right.
It's a little like a family, and women are better at looking at the whole. They're better at picking up the signs of stress. They're better at a spidey sense of knowing when someone's not telling the whole truth and nothing but the truth. I mean, think about it.
Oh, I'm one of seven children. Yeah. I can tell you that my role in the family has been, is everyone okay? Who's about to get in trouble?
Yeah.
And how can I help them from crashing into the wall? I know that role. And I know that there are many listeners out there who, as mothers or daughters or sisters, know that feeling as well. And I love this idea that the leader creates the strategy with a commitment that everybody wants to lean into. That is so crucial. And when the strategy is we are building to sell, what are some of the biggest psychological hurdles that founders face when they're preparing for the sale of their business?
Yeah.
Because it is, you know, it's a KPI. Okay, we're going to meet our numbers, but really how do emotionally, what are the psychological hurdles that she's going to have to jump over?
My personal opinion is that it would be harder for a female, I think, because of the identity issues that women face that are different than men. I think failure lands harder on women than it does on men. This is my experience that there are more men who can let it roll off their back like a duck, but a woman's going to process it and try to fix it and have more perseverance and more resilience. And
do you think they stay in it longer with the problems?
Yes, and sometimes to their own demise. And sometimes that perseverance, there's perseverance and resilience. I mean, perseverance is great. It's necessary for success, but you can persevere too long in the wrong area. And you can believe that you can fix something, anything. When the stress builds, that angst builds. So getting a little bit off the track here to talk about the factors of identity that get hooked. I want to be successful. This matters to me because women give up a lot more to start a business and sell a business, relationships and their family and partnerships and who they are as a person, especially because women do different things with money. And so winning isn't just about her. It's about the greater good that whatever she's built is going to manifest in the world. So it's a lot of pressure. And figuring out how to talk about that pressure to someone, probably not the senior team, probably not their partner, someone who can understand but know they're going to be okay, is a gift and also, I'd say, necessary for a positive exit to be able to think about who you are in all the ways, quantitatively, with the data from an assessment and the data inside the company, and what the external visibility of this particular founder says, what the competition says, what the possibility says, what the street says, what everyone says. But then who are they in their most inner self? Who are they? Do they have an inner circle of supportive women who understand them? That's huge, 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 huge.
Yeah, the personal board of directors.
Yes, it's really hard to find
but
a
that,
woman to
that,
understand.
When you have that, that is your fully functioning feedback loop. That should be the goal, right? That should be all of our goals.
With different rater groups, the personal, what'd you call them, board of directors?
Yeah, your personal board of directors.
Your personal board of directors, your trusted coach, your senior team. I mean, there's multiple
rater groups. Your financial advisor. Can you do this? Does this make sense?
Financial advisor, your GC or your legal consultant.
Your accountant, it's building the team.
All of the things.
Like, we talk a lot about that when we're in the exit planning mode with our clients, is that you need to build your team and you need to build it early. We like to see them building it 1 to 2 years before they sign a letter of intent. And you and I are going to be working on a really exciting project in August, the rollout of the F3 Fellowship. It's a year-long program, which will start over 2 days in August, where we will be working with a select group of female founders who are within 2 years of an exit on these very things, on maximizing the saleable value of their business, on maximizing their personal financial wealth, and on having a plan for being able to let go of the baby and something that you want to do once you've sold the business. And I love that we're working on this together, because what you bring to that third element, the what's next and how do you get to what's next and how do you have that human element outside of the metrics of maximizing a value and maximizing your wealth.
And like, how do you be proud of that baby once that baby's launched? You know, how do you be proud of it? What's your legacy? And how can you leverage your legacy to continue to do good? And where are your strengths going to manifest so that you can continue to do more? And it isn't the end. It's the end that's hard.
Oh, it's the beginning. It's really the beginning. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about this F3 Fellowship and we talk about the what's next, I have never met a female entrepreneur whose work is done. These women are extraordinary and they have incredible capacity. And the goal of this program and all programs around supporting female founders to raise capital, to exit well, is optionality. I want to see as many female founders exit well, tax efficiently as possible, so that A, they can become a rinse and repeat entrepreneur that doesn't need as much outside capital, and they can have a monster exit the next time. B, they can become an angel and venture investor and pay it forward the way it was likely paid forward for them. Or C, they can become an incredible philanthropist and invest in organizations that benefit women and girls. Or D, all of the above.
Or right? E, they can be a talent magnet. And the word gets out that this particular female founder builds talented teams and launches talented careers. I mean, to be a talent magnet would be also an amazing thing. For women.
I know quite a few of them. And they're coming to the fellowship. They're going to be part of the F3 Fellowship.
Excellent.
So I'm so excited that we just announced it on this podcast. Let's segue for a second. When we talk about preparing for the business, right, financially, why is it so important that founders prepare emotionally? Why?
I'm going to say decision making. Sound judgment. If you don't start to think about yourself in all the ways that a founder CEO is evaluated, all the ways they're under the microscope, if you're not truly aware of your strengths, where they work and where they don't, and covering up for your weaknesses because there's no perfect human being, if you don't know that, then the stress that manifests around any sale or any issue or problem that surfaces that must be dealt with, the stress can knock you off center. And if you're knocked off your center, and if you can't take a breath and think smartly and use your team well, your judgment is impacted negatively, and therefore the decisions aren't as solid as they could be. So number one, I think about a woman's ability or any CEO's ability to be able to negotiate the stress that's going to happen when a sale gets closer and closer and closer and all the negotiation happens and people start picking it apart and they find all these things wrong. When all that happens.
They say, hurry up.
And hurry up.
Sign now. And walk away.
And don't spend money on this and don't spend money on that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And cut back here and cut back there. So you have to be prepared and be comfortable in your own skin so that you can own your own power. Nobody else can take that power from you.
We talk a lot about values and how values are really they're the architecture. They're the scaffolding that hold us up. And we have many, many values in our life. So many that we can't even name them. But we know when a value has been crossed. So I would imagine at a time like this, when the stakes are so high, when you're in negotiations, that being very, very clear on your values is something that would benefit mm-hmm. you. For example, my team is sacrosanct. I'm not going to sacrifice my team, or I care the most about money. Typically, it's not that case for women, but they want to make sure that their team isn't going to get fired, or that, you know, the work that they've been doing will continue. And so when they go to negotiate with a potential buyer, knowing what their line in the sand is really helpful up front. And I would imagine that the work that you do really helps to outline that.
Yes, you're right, that values are really important. And when you start a relationship with a founder in that, let's say, 2 years out, it's important for someone like me to understand those values well and why they're important and how they manifest in an individual's life. Because values drive behavior. And so as a trusted advisor, when I see a female, a woman, behaving in a way that's not congruent with the values that I've learned to espouse and hold as mine also working with her, if you're close enough as a trusted advisor to bring that up and say, let me tell you what I heard you say, let me tell you what I saw you do, and tell me how that's consistent with XYZ value. That helps the whole grounded, aha, you're right. Aha, I got thrown off by this new piece of information or by this problem that just surfaced in software or whatever's going on that's present and urgent to separate what's important. Urgent and important, you mean, those words are thrown around all the time, and how you set priorities and how you keep the rudder pointed towards the goal.
Yeah, I usually talk about it like a seesaw. So we see ourselves at the heavy end of the seesaw dealing with all of the shit that uh-huh. we have to deal with. We've got employees, we've got customers, we've got revenue, we've got, you know, complaints. And I like to say, being chased by the saber-toothed tiger. It's all about survival. And it's harder to stay focused on you on the other end of the seesaw, hanging up in the air. That's future you. And not losing sight of what future you wants out of this. And for women, and this is a gendered, obviously, conversation, but, you know, you work with a lot of successful women. Do they approach this transition of exiting differently than men?
I would say yes, in my own experience. Even senior females on a senior team who are leaving for whatever reason, it's more personal, I think. I think women personalize more information, more outcomes, more issues than men do, and helping them separate what they need to own from what is just business is important. That's where all the sort of as an objective outsider helps instead of insiders with an agenda, even when they don't want to have one. It's hard not to be biased if you're part of the company. So yes, that's one issue. I would say the other one is, I think it's harder for a woman to be respected in the larger context of the business, whatever that context is. And so being respected, wanting to matter, and wanting to do something that's meaningful. I don't think I've ever met a senior woman who didn't want to make sure what she was doing was meaningful and that she mattered to whatever those values were driving for. The team, like you said, Jill, the organization, the community, the outcome that was going to serve some greater good, whatever it was. I think it's stronger for women. It's not, of course, it's a human quality and men have it also, but I think it's a deeper driver for women.
You said something really funny the other day. You said that you consider yourself to be extra gray matter for your clients. And I love that as an idea, right? Because it's a diverse point of view. It's this fully functioning feedback loop that she may not be getting. As I want to land the plane here, right? As we are talking with founders who are getting closer to their exits, and I do think we've got a window here where we're going to start seeing a lot more female founders exiting for a host of reasons. But what is one thing, one or two things that every founder should start thinking about years before the sale?
Another dream. And they had a dream at the start, or a vision, or a goal. But why only one right now, just because you're selling it? I mean, these founders have big brains and lots of energy and driven and curious and bright, all the rest, all the things that make them abnormal. But why not have a second dream? And you can start incubating a dream early, doing the homework, setting up the relationships, feeling it out, seeing if it's got legs, which will be healthy so that 24/7, 365 isn't all on the sail. So you can back off from the team and sit there and, yes, look at my team go. Woohoo! They've taken off and everybody thinks, she trusts me. She's not answering the questions and telling me what to do and asking, drilling down into the data. She trusts me. We must be fine.
Which, of course, makes the company look more valuable.
Sustainable.
And sustainable because the buyers are going to think, oh, okay, she's not the only game in the town.
One thing is another dream. And I'm not going to define what that dream is. It's personal to everyone. But having someone to talk to about that dream who isn't going to evaluate it or try to ask you how you're going to get done, it's just going to help you explore in the biggest way, I think, is number one. Because then when you've decided, here's two dreams, I don't know which one. Well, let's figure out how we investigate each one of those two. So you've got some compare and contrast and let's see what it is.
I love that. That is a perfect way to close it out. Lee, thank you so much for your nuggets of wisdom. It's such a joy. And I'm looking forward to our relationship with the F3 fellows. This is going to be good trouble we're going to make. I'm telling you.
It's an honor, Jill. It's truly honor for me. I can't even say it. It's going to make me emotional to think about what I can do to give back. And I can't think of a better way to give power back to women. So thank you, Jill.
My joy. Well, one of the biggest takeaways from today's conversation is that a successful exit isn't just selling a business. It's about transitioning successfully to the next chapter of your life. The F3, the women that I work with, we believe every founder should focus on the three critical areas: maximizing the saleable value of your business, maximizing your personal financial wealth, and preparing yourself personally for what's next. And that's what this conversation was about. Because at the end, the goal isn't simply to just leave your company. It's to create the freedom and opportunity to continue making an impact in a new and meaningful way. Right, Lee? So thank you so much for joining us and sharing your insights. And to our listeners, remember, your business may be one of your greatest accomplishments, but it doesn't define your future. Your skills, experiences, wisdom, all of that that helped you build that very thing is what's going to help you thrive in whatever comes next. So thank you for joining us on the F3, and we'll see you next time. Onward. That's it for today's episode of F3, Female Forward Finance. If you found this conversation valuable, be sure to subscribe, leave a review, and more importantly, share it with another woman who could benefit. If you'd like to stay updated with insights, resources, and exclusive content, join my mailing list by emailing me at jill.lloyd@ubs.com. Until next time, keep building, keep growing, and let's make those financial dreams a reality. Onward.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.
This podcast was edited by Resonate Recordings.